Clubhouse.
Some of you know I've been working on a sequel, and I have to admit it's been hard avoiding the sophomore slump. Just found myself writing the most cliched story. The heroine, the long-suffering wife, returns from a writing sabbatical only to find that she's lost her husband to a young assistant. I don't think it's any secret that my writing is somewhat autobiographical. So imagine how stunned I was to learn that the truth is much more dramatic than anything I ever could have written. Because the truth is, the young assistant, this assistant, is not the 20-something she claims to be. Liza Miller is 42 years old, and she has been lying shamelessly about who she is for years.
Hi, and welcome to the Heller Good Podcast for Younger. I'm Sheila McGann.
And I'm Emma Good.
Tonight, we're discussing season 6 of Younger in preparation for the season 7 premiere.
Yay! It seems forever. It's been like September 2019 is when we last saw them.
That's when season 6 ended, right?
Yes.
Oh,
and
Lord.
It just feels like forever ago, but now it's like days away.
Yeah, but like so much has changed since September 2019, like both in their world and in ours, right?
Definitely. So there's lots to catch up on.
Yeah, so this was supposed to air like June of last year. Like that was the original production schedule timeline. So they're almost a year away. I mean, I'm really happy that it was supposed to be June of this year, but they moved it up to April. So hooray, you know, for them being able to catch up on that and just be able to bring us that early. Before we get started, I do want you to check something out for us. We created a Spotify playlist. It's called the Heller Good Younger Playlist by Pod Clubhouse, the same as the podcast name here. It's a little bit of mood music to help you along as you wait the days in between the new episodes. We are going back to the Younger season vault to bring some of the songs from those episodes into the playlist as well to give you a little bit of bounce in your step as you go through your week. It's actually live right now with songs from episode 1 from season 7. So a little bit of a preview there for you as well. So Emma, welcome to Pod Clubhouse. Very excited to have you here talking Younger with us.
Thank you. I'm very excited to be talking about it.
Emma and I know each other. We're not going to show you how long because
it's been a long time.
It's in the multi-decade like friendship realm.
Yes.
So Emma and I went to college together. We went to uni together in Australia. I did a student exchange from New York to Australia in the late 90s. We'll do that. We'll give like a general time frame.
Very late 90s.
Very late 90s. Like on the cusp of the new millennium. Yeah. And we've just been friends like since then.
I know. It's hard to believe it's been that many decades, honestly.
Yeah.
I still feel like we're just left university sometimes.
So let me ask you, just to get back to Younger, how did you find this show?
Ah, well, this is an interesting story. So Younger and I have a long, drawn-out love affair. Initially,
I saw it.
Yes. Well, initially, the first 2 seasons were showing in the UK, but they were on a channel that then disappeared and no one else picked it up. And I was devastated. I heard it was still having episodes, but I could not see them in the UK. It was awful. I then visited some friends in the US and they had a streaming service that actually had series 3 showing. I got to watch series 3 at their house. Wasn't the best season for them to be introduced to it because it didn't have the first 2 seasons for them to get the...
Oh, the backstory.
Backstory and the dynamics. And that was obviously the season where Liza sort of gives into Charles the same night that Josh is going to propose.
Oh.
And so they were not really good fans of Liza.
Yeah. Doesn't paint her in a good light right there.
Not at all. They kind of just thought she was a bit of an asshole, to be honest.
Yeah.
So they didn't become fans, unfortunately, because they really didn't get the right season to get started. And then it wasn't until the pandemic and the shutdown in Australia that I found out it was streaming on one of the services here. So I only saw seasons 4, 5, and 6 last year. This long, drawn-out love affair, as I said.
Yeah.
But I started just, like, from the beginning. Yeah.
Like, denied so much of it. I had never heard of Younger until the pandemic last year during lockdown. Oh, never heard of it. Didn't know it existed. Was like, what are you talking about? So my podcast partner, Steph, we did Yellowstone together. We were chatting and, you know, she happened to mention that she was watching, she's catching up on the last season of Younger. She'd missed it like through like just the course of like having children and all the rest of it and just being busy with life. And now that she had some time, she was catching up. And I'm like, what is Younger? And she's like, oh, girl, you don't know. I was like, no. So she told me about it. And the way that she framed it was just, basically, it was like the IMDb summary. This woman, she's 40 years old and she, you know, has to find her way back to the world after divorcing her husband and just like how this shenanigans ensue. I started watching it, I think that night. I think we wrapped up around midnight and because it was lockdown time, like who was sleeping? I think I watched like three episodes that night because they're really short when you stream. It's like, what, 21, 22 minutes. So I watched like three episodes that night. I think I finished the series by the following week.
Well, when I found it on the streaming service here in Australia, I started from season one again and watched the whole series in, I think, about 3 days.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I was home. So I'm going to preface it. I was homeschooling a first grader. He was six. I had my own work to do. And just living in New York in March of last year was just not pleasant because we were like at the heart of just so much of the badness that was going on. So, yeah. So I needed a really good escape. And this was it for me. And I think that's part of the reason why I fell so hard in love with this show is that because I needed like a happy escape. It really gave me that kind of outlet. And I was just like, I just needed something just to smile about and just a cute love story. I generally don't like rom-com type TV shows. Like I like rom-com movies, but for some reason I shy away from these. So like I'm very particular about the rom-com type shows that I watch. And this is one of them. New Girl is another one.
Yeah. I mean, yes, this is a rom-com, but I also feel like the relationships between like Kelsey and Liza and then, you know, Maggie and Liza and the girls in the show is what makes it the heart of the show. So it's not purely a rom-com.
I agree with that statement wholeheartedly. There's so much depth to these people, their relationships, and it's not just about, are you Team Josh or are you Team Charles? Wait, which one are you? Everyone has a stance.
Yeah, I'm most totally Team Josh. He just brings out something in Liza, I think, that Charles never does. And he's just really, really hot.
I tend to be more Team Josh for a lot of those reasons that you mentioned, because there's a certain level of honesty that he brings out in her. And as much as we've had to see Liza be like two different people, to be her 26-year-old self and her 40, you know, year old, 40 plus year old self, she's at her most comfortable, I feel, with him.
She lets herself go a bit. Like sometimes I feel like when she's at work and when she's with Charles, she seems a bit uptight. But when she's with Josh, she seems to relax and just be herself a bit more.
Yeah, like even when she was going back and, you know, talking about like what was her, like this is a couple of episodes, I mean, a couple of seasons ago, like what was her first concert? And she was like Nirvana. And he was like, wait, what? You know, there was a lot of being herself and letting down her guard. What you said, there's so much more of a better fit. I mean, yes, there is a lot of, you know, chemistry and passion with Charles, but I just never feel that she's truly unguarded with him.
No, I feel the same.
A lot of people are Team Josh. I mean, like there's a Facebook fan group and there's lots of conversation about like Josh and Charles. So the creator of the show. So every time you watch the credits, the first name that pops up is Darren Star. Does Darren Star ring any bells for you?
No, I'm pretty sure it wasn't he Sex in the City as well.
Yes,
as
ma'am. Well.
Love that show.
His first like major gig, Emma, was Beverly Hills 90210.
Are you serious?
I swear on all that is holy.
I had no idea. Obviously, you know, growing up in the 90s, that was the show that everyone watched.
It was the show for people our age. So, you know, in 1990, when Beverly Hills 90210 started, it was like this huge cultural phenomenon. Let's talk about Darren Star for a second. He's done Beverly Hills 90210. Melrose Place.
Love that one too.
Right? You know? And Sex in the City. Like those are like his really big top billings of things that I'm just like are still cultural icons. You know, how many quotes do you hear in the span of your lifetime about either Beverly Hills 90210, some reference to, you know, the Brenda Dillon dynamic from 90210?
I still think of Losing My Religion as Brenda and Dylan's like breakup song. Whenever I hear that, I always think of her playing that when they broke up.
Yeah. So, yeah. So Darren Star has like some major like pop culture cred. And the fact that this is a continuation of sort of his vision, like I can see elements of 90210, of Sex and the City in this show. And you touched on it with the relationships between Liza and Maggie and Liza and Kelsey, not just the romantic.
Yeah, I think definitely all those shows, maybe not Melrose Place so much, but the others definitely had strong female relationships with them. I remember watching Melrose Place. I just remember that being more about bitch fighting between the women. So
yeah. And
maybe
it was just,
not quite the same dynamic there.
No, it wasn't the highlight for me, but I mean, it is one of those like cultural flashpoints that people, once they grew up from Beverly Hills 90210, they kind of gravitated towards Melrose Place. I was never really a fan, but definitely Sex and the City and 90210, like those were some heavy cultural influences that definitely remain. I mean, like Beverly Hills 90210 is 30 years old and he was part of the reboot, and we won't hold that against him. For 90210, we won't hold that against him.
I didn't actually mind the reboot too much. It wasn't as good as the original series, because how could you ever top that? But
yeah,
I know there were some good things out of that series too.
I liked how irreverent it was, that they were not taking themselves seriously. Like everyone's like, yeah, we just need a payday.
It was a bit of fun. Do you feel like there was a lot of like insider jokes when they were doing that one?
Yeah, like I remember before that, because I covered it for Pop Culture Review as a love it or leave it. Like, should we, you know, go back in time and you know, rejoin the Walshes? And it was also like right after Luke Perry had died. It was like the summer after he died. Oh, and I remember just like watching like the last season of Beverly Hills 90210 just to kind of refresh myself in order to lead into the reboot. And I was just like, I can't watch this yet. Like, I'm not okay from Luke Perry, because like that was like, oh my God, like he was all over my walls when I was 12 years old.
But I wonder if that's why they also did it as kind of like I know it was already in play before he died, but I felt like they sort of honored him pretty well in that first episode.
I do too. I do. They mentioned him and then they had the still at the end, and it still gives me a little bit of a in my throat. So even in preparation for like that Beverly Hills 90210, I told you I rewatched the season prior from season 10 of 90210. So we do our homework here at Pod Clubhouse, dear listeners. So we have rewatched, Emma and I have both rewatched season 6 to bring you the highlights, to catch you up on where we left off with everybody back in September of 2019, because a lot happened in that season. And without some sort of like a refresher, you might plunk yourself into episode 1 of season 7. And be like, oh, wait, why is that happening? So we did some massive homework for you guys, and we're going to bring you in this episode the highlight reel, if you will, of season 6 by character, and see, yeah, basically catch you up to where everyone is right now.
Yes, and I have to say, when I went back and rewatched it, I'd forgotten how much had happened in season 6. I thought some of it had happened in season 5, but there was a lot that happened in season 6.
You know, when you go back and you look at maybe seasons 1 to 5, stuff happened, and it was mostly about like the Liza reveals here and there and like who knew what. But season 6, man, everybody was like a ping pong ball or a roller coaster ride. They were all over the place.
I know. It just seemed like massive things happened in season 6, and just it zoomed by quickly.
Yeah. So they're framing season 7 as the finale, right? The final season, which I'm sad about.
I'm very sad about that. But, you know, like, I feel like now that Liza's secret is revealed and everyone knows, maybe they feel it's time to start wrapping it up, but I'm definitely going to miss this show.
Yeah. Just to back up for a second. So Younger, so you talked about the stiltedness of Younger in the access that you had to it. And I'm going to say that the same thing happened here. Like, I wasn't watching it all along because I didn't know about it, but it definitely had, like, it was on network TV. Then it went to TV Land here. So it went to like a basic cable kind of a channel, where this was right around the time that Netflix and Amazon were just starting their own content, their premium content. And for this show to get picked up was pretty remarkable, because it wasn't this blockbuster hit. Like I said, I'd never heard of it. I mean, I had a small child at the time too, and I'm going to blame him for that. I will throw him under the bus on this aspect.
This might explain why it disappeared in the UK.
So it went to something called TV Land, and now I have it on Paramount Plus, which is like the CBS All Access streaming service. The logo on it for season 6 is MTV. So it really network hopped. And the fact that it has had the longevity that it has is pretty remarkable. So I'm glad that it's on a major network now with Paramount here. So how are you accessing it from Australia?
So in Australia, we have a streaming service called Stan, which is owned by one of the networks here in Australia. So they have quite a few different sort of shows from the US. I don't know, it's a little bit disjointed how you find shows here in Australia. And there's shows that I used to watch in the UK that were US shows that I can no longer get in Australia. So I do sometimes have difficulty accessing the shows I like to watch. You guys don't know how easy you have it in the US.
There were movies that were coming out in the late 90s when, like, they had already been out in the US, and I got to Australia and they were just coming out. So it was like, a couple of month lag. But for some things, it's like a year or...
I love Grey's Anatomy, and obviously there is the spin-off Station 19, which has been running for a few seasons already. That has only just started showing in Australia, Station 19.
Oh, we need to do some like password sharing of like our streaming services or something.
You know, it can be a little bit behind here. I think they sometimes just wait to see if they're going to be popular before they bring them over. So
I'm sure there's like licensing and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That has to be, you know, dealt with and things like that. But you know what? Like, you and I can talk after this. I'll give you some passwords and we'll see what we can catch you up with.
You know, I'm addicted to TV, so any help I can get to access it, I will always take.
When you said that you were interested in doing this, I was like, well, that is perfect, because I know that she's going to know, that you're going to know your stuff, that you're going to have a passion for this show. So I'm very happy that you signed on to be this, because we need TV addicts.
And I am definitely one of those.
Who like to talk. And the fact that you're a night owl is helping out a whole lot because of the 14-hour time difference right now. So like I said, so we're going to go into season 6 right now, give you the highlight reel, talk about the characters so that you don't have to. Like, it will basically catch you up to where everyone is when season 7, episode 1 starts. You will be all caught up, and we are going to be doing this week by week. We're going to do a weekly recap of the show, and it's going to drop right after the show airs on Thursdays, and that'll be Eastern time. So whatever time it's airing Eastern time is where it will drop right afterwards. So it might be morning time for you if you're listening in Australia. We're going to assume that you saw the episode. We're going to talk about the episode. We're not necessarily going to recap it like blow by blow of what happened, but we are going to talk about what happened to the characters and what we think about what they went through and where this is going. Definitely watch the episode before you come listen to us, because we don't want to drop anything that you haven't seen and had a chance to digest and maybe have questions about. So are we ready to dive into season 6?
Definitely. So should we start with Liza?
I think that is a logical point to start with, seeing as how, you know, the show's really kind of about her.
Well, if we didn't have her, we didn't have a show, do we?
So in season 6, she makes some broad strokes to make her relationship with Charles a priority. For me, like, one of the big things is that she marginalized Josh in such a way with that letter. You know, she meant to be polite, but it was also like right after like the steamiest of ads was released, right?
You know, I hated that letter. Like, I just thought it was such a cop out. They had been through so much together. If you're going to break up with him, you had to do that face to face.
With the framework of that conversation, the author of that book pitch was saying, you know, like, ghosting is like the worst thing you can do. You do owe people that sort of respect of sharing your feelings so that this way it's clean, it's out there. But I just felt for what they'd been through, a letter was so impersonal. And there are certain things that need to be said face to face.
Definitely.
Or at least live, right? You know, not everything today can be face to face, but like, there are certain conversations that need to be done live. And that was definitely one of them. While I understand the allure of a letter, it's a chance to get your thoughts out without the other person's reaction.
Yeah, she would never have been able to say it to him. Because she just, the feelings for him are clearly still so strong. I just don't think she could ever get the words out, you know, face to face with him.
And then his reaction to the letter, Emma, I was just crushed watching him read the letter on the steps of the public library.
Yeah. You know what, though? Clearly, Liza's like the strongest relationship he's ever had, the closest relationship he's had on the show. You don't really hear much about his family and whether he's close to them or not, but Liza's been there for him through so much in his life. And she promised to also be with him and be there for him when he signed the lease to Ingberg, when he did that in season 5. You know, she had made promises to him that she would always be there for him, and then she was basically going back on her promise.
That never sat well with me. From the time that she, like, you know, made the decision to cut Josh out of her life, I'm like, but you have certain responsibilities to this person.
Yeah.
You just don't cut off a friend.
This was a decision she made, because watching the season back, before I watched it again, I thought it was Charles that sort of gave an ultimatum. But having watched it back, she actually had made the decision. It wasn't Charles saying, you cannot see Josh again. Obviously, he didn't like it, but he wasn't forcing her to stop having a relationship with him. You know, that was her decision. Yeah, that was her decision to make. And I kind of feel like she was doing it because she felt uncomfortable about her feelings for Josh, which makes me wonder why she's with Charles, really. Hence, you know, me being Team Josh.
There's really no way for that relationship to thrive if Liza is confessing to Maggie, or she confesses to Maggie at one point, that she has feelings for Josh when she's with him. You know, if you have conflicting feelings for someone that you had a very intimate relationship with, who's still basically in your life on almost a daily basis.
And you know, where she lives, she can't really avoid him completely. They're going to run into each other. It's, you know, New York is a big city, but it seems like they're in a small country town. The amount of times they just seem to run into each other.
Right. I mean, they live in the same community in Williamsburg and Brooklyn. You know, just a small little aside, you've been to New York enough times that I would consider you pretty native. But like, New York in this show is such like a supporting character, you know, like where Diana gets married. I know exactly where that church is. Like, they frame it as being in Staten Island. It's in Queens. It's on Queens Boulevard. It's Our Lady Queen of Martyrs. It is a gorgeous church. They often eat lunch in Bryant Park. Any of the cafe scenes you see with Kelsey and Liza, and then Kelsey and Zane, especially this season, are all in Bryant Park, which is in Midtown. It's near Times Square. I used to work right across the street, so I used to see Sex and the City being filmed. I used to see a ton of stuff being filmed in Bryant Park. Everybody filmed in Bryant Park. That's a little sort of like a side note, because I always just like look to see like what they're framing from New York. Apparently for season 6, they did a lot of filming in the springtime, where I feel like New York City just glows. Like, it's just, everything is blooming. Everything is looking nice. And you come here a lot in Easter time, which is springtime. So you see a lot of that blooming, flowering, you know, New York. And it's, I tell people, I said, come to New York in May and September. Those are like when we shine.
It is a bit of a love story to New York itself. It is such an amazing city and just has so many amazing places to see.
And now, like, Brooklyn is being showcased really well in this show. Brooklyn's become its own little, like, micro city.
And you know what? I've never actually been to Brooklyn. Clearly, I need to go and explore next time I visit.
Yes. Once we're all vaccinated and out of lockdown and quarantines are over, we'll go explore some Williamsburg and maybe run into someone as hot as Josh.
Sounds good.
But, you know, in terms of, so back to like Josh and Liza and Liza and Charles, I just feel that like Liza, that's where I, you know, made the summary statement in the beginning by saying that Liza feels that she needs to like make the relationship with Charles basically exclusive at Josh's expense. And yeah. I just love how at the most inopportune times, Josh is thrust back into her life between like that microdosing retreat.
Oh my God, I love that episode. That was probably one of my favorite episodes from the whole season.
And anytime you can give me Sutton Foster dancing.
Oh my God, that dance was amazing.
I mean, but that's like her main gig. Like, she is a Broadway star. Yeah, like Thoroughly Modern Millie. That's what she's known for. And for the Tony Awards a couple of years ago, she had done like a song and dance number from Anything Goes. And then Jonathan Groff from Glee and Hamilton and just amazingness, he did a spoof on her performance of that. Like, so he basically learned how to tap dance and stuff like that because he was so like taken with her performance. Anytime I can see Sutton Foster singing and dancing, and we did get her singing early on too. Episode 1 of season 6, when her and Kelsey go to find Diana in the piano bar.
Yes, with 9 to 5.
I'm like clapping. I'm like, anytime we can get Sutton Foster singing and dancing, I am here for it.
Definitely. Like, I think I always love when I see her, you know, dancing, singing. It's clearly a love of hers. As a character and actor, she just comes alive when she's dancing and singing.
Yes. And there is that certain glow about her when she's just, you know, twirling. And that whole dancing was just, it was hotter than hot. It was like hotter than a thousand suns, you know, between Josh and Charles just being like in tuxes and dancing with her and, you know, really showing the heat that both of those relationships still have for her in her drugged state. I feel like you're going to be your most honest when you're impaired, right?
But I also feel like it showed how much she's torn between the two of them. I mean, let's face it, though, if Josh was just in an older body, but it was his personality, she would totally go for him. The only problem she has is his age.
So. Right. You know, and he's conflicted by it, too, because, you know, he... Earlier on in the series, you know, he wants a family and, you know, that there's a lot to that. Like if you're with somebody and you want children or you don't want children and they do, you know, like that's a big conversation. That's a big life decision.
Yeah.
Kids are hard. They're not for everyone.
Yes. I must admit, I am not a child bearer. I'm quite glad I don't have children.
You know, I have a kid, one, and he's like having three, and he's wonderful. But there are times it's just like, damn, this is hard.
Yeah, I'm definitely enjoying being the aunt. I hype them up and then I give them back to their parents.
Yeah, and you know what? There's a certain luxury and a certain appeal in that too. Josh was articulate enough to be like, I want that. And Liza's like, I don't know if I'm there. That was a big fork in their relationship, obviously.
And obviously, you know, she has a grown daughter already. She has done that path already. Whether she's with Charles or now Josh has also got a child, whether she's with Charles or Josh, they both have children that are still young, that still need parenting. Whichever relationship she ends up with, she's still going to be a stepmom at some point.
Yeah, I think it was just the bearing of children for her. She was just like, I don't know if I can go back to that.
And I know friends that have done it in their 40s, and it's everything they've told me is it's harder to do it when you're 40.
Yeah, you just don't bounce back the same. And like, dude, I need my sleep. So the other big thing for Liza is, and you touched on it before, is the big reveal of her secret. And it was done in the most...
horrible fashion, really.
Charles's ex-wife at this debutante ball, which I thought was adorable, adult prom, found this out through kind of unscrupulous means. Like, you know, she signed Liza up to be, you know, a guardian at the school to be able to pick the kids up and, you know, showing... an olive branch, I think she calls it. And then she finds this out. And like that secretary never should have been, you know, obviously sharing that information. But, you know, people do that kind of stuff. Was Pauline justified in that reveal?
I don't think so. I think she was just angry and wanted to hurt someone. I think the fact that Charles knew really, really hurt her. And, you know, Liza and her had got close when they were editing the book, and she'd already felt hurt by the fact that Liza was the one that was having the affair with Charles. So I can kind of see why she did it, but it wasn't really a cool way to do it. Like, it was just so public. And I think she comes off looking bad by doing it that way.
I thought so, too. I mean, yes, I agree with everything you said, that she was hurt and she needed to hurt somebody as much as she was feeling hurt. The way that she did it, yes, I feel like the backlash, as much as it was bad for Millennial, I think Pauline will ultimately come out looking the worst for it, because now, once the bombshell ripples have, you know, calmed, it's going to come back like, you're the publisher's ex-wife. She's having a relationship. I'm not even calling it an affair, because I mean, like, they're separated. Like, it's moving towards divorce. It's like, they're not actively married. And like, first of all, lady, you took off and left your family.
Yeah.
Like, let's go back in time here, Pauline. Like, you are not like the moral bearer of the season here.
Because the first we ever hear about the relationship is that she had an affair. She left them, you know.
For a year.
Yeah.
Like, just took off and, you know, almost no contact. Then to drop this bombshell at this big event, and they're your publisher. Like, why would you want to hurt your publisher? So it was just, for me, it was her not thinking things through and just being hurt and having this platform that she could do this.
And it just comes across as a bit petty. In the end, I think.
A bit. I think a lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to jump to Diana a little bit. I know that we have like questions about her. So the fallout from this reveal. So what did you think about Diana's reaction to Liza's secret?
I loved that, first of all, she got up to defend Liza. She was just totally behind her. And the things she actually said about Liza were really nice. Like, you know, she was saying very nice things about Liza, you know, that she was this sweet girl and, you know, of course it couldn't be true. But then when she finds out it was true, she just looks so devastated. And I can understand that, you know, over the time that they've worked together, Liza became her closest friend. And to have been lied to for so long by her closest friend, I think, was just devastating for her. And the fact that everyone else knew before her as well.
Yeah, that scene was hard to watch because you could just see her going from, like, this woman is deranged. How dare you besmirch our colleague, to, oh my God, they all knew and they must think that I'm like the biggest fool ever. But I appreciated how different Diana was this season. And I guess, so from season one, when there was a moment where Liza needed like $1,800 to, I think it was to make Caitlin's tuition or something like that.
And she was trying to sell her underwear.
Yeah. Oh my God. That's, first of all, so gross. But she tapes the envelope with the check to her computer. Like, she goes out to lunch or something, she comes back and it's there. It was just like such an undercover cool move to show, like, Diana, like, you have this tough exterior, I get it, but deep down you are really like a teddy bear.
Exactly.
But I feel like Diana had really a different season for me for season six. I felt that she was just more emotionally available, more so to Liza, and maybe the relationship with Enzo and the rockiness that they experienced, you know, made her just be a little bit more, be able to better show some vulnerability, to let Liza in a little more. And I say that through like the veil of, like, you know, offering to, you know, asking her to do all the maid of honor tasks without actually saying, you know, that's your title. And she's like, well, if you need to be promoted to that.
Yeah. And you know that she was like, I'll only give you one hug a year, but this is it.
It's hard, like, for somebody like her, because she's, you know, she is very steely and she works hard to maintain this tough exterior. I just liked the evolution for this. And it was really a good setup then for this big reveal and her level of hurt. I mean, she ends up in the hospital having a panic attack. Like, when she collapses in Times Square, I'm like, that's not the place to collapse.
Honestly, you don't know what's on that ground.
Exactly. I mean, the only thing worse could possibly be like Penn Station or Grand Central Station's bathroom floor.
Oh, I don't even want to consider. It's really gross there.
Diana had like this emotional growth this season because she did have this meaningful relationship with Enzo and they ended up getting married, which I thought was just like, I was so happy for her.
I'm just so glad that she let Enzo in because, and you know, she almost lost him at one point by saying, yeah, Charles is the sort of person I thought I would end up with. And, you know, Enzo rightly assumes that she's settling. But, you know, there's just something about Enzo that brings out a softness to her that you haven't really seen in any other season. And she was clearly lonely and wanted to be in a relationship. You know, she put up with that psychiatrist person that moved his son in just because it felt like she just didn't want to be alone. And he was a really awful person.
And he was just taking full advantage of her. Yeah,
exactly. You know, so to have, you know, for having her find someone that really seemed to care about her, and you know, she was putting a lot of effort into that. You know, let's face it, she had to go get a ferry to Staten Island. I mean, I've never even made it that far. When I visited New York, it seems a long way away.
Staten Island gets a bad rap. Like, the Staten Island does have a lot of good restaurants and things like that. Like that is true. It's the hardest borough to get to.
I feel like it's kind of where I lived my last day in London. I lived in Southeast London, where it is not on the tube map, and people seem to find it difficult to get there because there's no tube out there. There is trains. There's a lot of buses on very slow roads because there's no tube. So I feel like Staten Island's like the southeast of London.
Yeah, it's almost like kind of forgotten about when it comes to tourism.
Yeah.
And there is a lot there. But yeah, you touched on this. So like, she wrote this article in the Modern Romance that Lauren had set up. And actually, that's where we got the name for this podcast. So we're calling it Heller Good because Emma's last name is Good. Lauren had this cute little idea for a PR firm. And that's where we got the name Heller Good. That's what we came up with. So we are the Heller Good podcast.
Yes.
But yeah, so Lauren had set up this article in Modern Romance, and Diana really got a chance to write a letter to Enzo, essentially, because he cut her off and he wasn't answering her calls, and he found it. And she got a chance to express herself without interruption and to be thoughtful about it. So in that aspect, that letter worked for me. The letter that Liza ended up writing to Josh did not work for me.
But people also like getting letters that are telling them good things about them.
Yeah, right. And then, but I mean, she didn't even just write a letter to him. I mean, she wrote it publicly. That was to anybody who picked this up, right? So that I liked Diana's arc this whole season. I feel like she became much more of an integral player. And then the moment when she asked Liza to get her the spreadsheet number, saying, "I know that you can get them for me, but I just want you to do it." And this was the morning after the panic attack and the reveal.
Yeah.
And Liza goes, "I love you too." Yeah. And I was just like, that's what this show is about. It's about these love stories between these women in this very strong, supportive kind of a way.
Yeah, and the fact that Liza understands that that's how she shows her love. You know, she's never going to be touchy-feely about it or have deeper, meaningful conversations. You know, that's just not Diana.
And then, but I also feel that that's like Liza's maturity that she brings to the situation. If you're 26, 27, you may not understand that subtext.
Yeah.
From Diana going, you know, welling up with tears, going, "Can you get me the spreadsheet numbers? I know I can do it, but I want you to." And then also just like knowing how to reach Diana when she was in a bad place, you know, at the very beginning of the season when Kelsey was named publisher and Charles stepped down with the relationship with Liza becoming public, knowing that Diana needed that space in the gay piano bar. I want to go there. I want to find that place and I want to go.
I'm coming with you if you go.
Oh, hell yeah. And, you know, you and I can do a karaoke version of whatever. Because that's what we used to do back in the day. But to understand that Diana needed that space and then how to reach her. So I feel like if Liza had been, you know, maybe Kelsey's age, she wouldn't understand that necessarily the same way.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, she does make it to the altar with Enzo. Yay!
So excited for her. Like, it's just a great new chapter, I think, for her.
The season was heavy with a lot of the emotions and a lot of the back and forth between who's the publisher at Millennial. You know, there was a bit of a revolving door there. So I feel like having the wedding and the dynamic between Diana and Enzo really gave a chance to balance out the drama.
Definitely, because there was just so much drama happening, like between having the two companies happening and the competition between them. And then that was causing competition between Charles and Liza. That was not great for their relationship.
I did appreciate the fact that they showed how close-knit like Enzo's family is, how Diana had to overcome this daunting wall of an Italian family. I mean, there's, you know, she's introduced in season 5 to the whole family and there's a ton of people. There's dynamics within the family that they think she's too old, that they're, you know, hinting that Enzo and the ex-girlfriend is now the baby's godmother and that has some significance and they're trying to like push Diana out of the picture. Like I'm not going to say I know these people, but I know these people.
Yeah.
In terms of like this Italian family dynamic. And it's not just limited to Italians, but it was just easy to frame it in this way.
Yeah. I mean, I know families that can be like that too. I think we all do. I loved how he sort of responded by going, "No, she's important to me and I want her in my life." And, you know, did the surprise proposal.
And he put a ring on it.
You know, and the fact that she also went along with it, because, you know, I felt like before Enzo, Diana probably expected like the perfect proposal and things like that. But I think with Enzo, she just was like, "No, this is what I want. I don't need the extras that, you know, people think they need." That pretty much covers Diana for the season.
You touched on this just a moment ago. Season 5, you know, just to go back that far, ends with Charles stepping down as publisher, promoting Kelsey to publisher. But we find out in very early in season 6 that he's actually mortgaging his very expensive Manhattan townhouse to run a startup rival publishing house and kept it super secret. I did not like the secrecy of it, the fact that he was mortgaging his townhouse. I mean, that's a lot of leverage to bring to a company that's essentially competing with the company that he still owns.
I just didn't really understand his reasoning behind this. I get that he wanted something to do, being just a chairman of the board or whatever the new position was. I just feel like if you're going to do something new, do something in a different arena. Don't compete with something that you've already done and that you're still connected to.
I agree. And there was so much, there's so much media available now. Like there's Audible books, there's podcasts, there's a ton of different media that you could still promote ideas and new material. It didn't sit well with me, the secrecy of it, him bringing in Zane as well. So now you got two people who know like millennial empiricals, like deepest, darkest secrets, and how they operate is they just know so much about how these people function, go after books. And like, it feels like almost like insider trading in a way.
Yeah. If you are going to go into publishing, at least make it that you're publishing something different to what the previous company was.
Right. Like, you know, do college textbooks or something.
Yeah, I hear there's money in that. You know, but why set up that competition? It was clearly never going to end well. And he saw it as a win-win. I don't really see how he could see that as a win-win. Someone was always going to lose. Yes, he wins because he owns both. But, you know, no one else seems to win in the equation.
Yeah, the risk definitely didn't outweigh the benefit for me here. And then I felt bad, like when he came back to Millennial and, you know, he was working for Kelsey, and she even voices to Liza that she's intimidated by Charles. Like, you know, he hired her, right? So she grew up under his tutelage, and it just didn't, it never felt like a fair setup.
But also, it's not just that she used to work, you know, as his subordinate. He still owned the company. Ultimately, he's still the one she has to report to.
Yeah, on the board, right? You know, exactly. So it's a dual reporting relationship.
Yeah. So as much as, you know, she was his boss, he was still her boss as well.
So there was this like back and forth with the companies. Ultimately, he agrees like to Maggie comes with the idea to merge the two companies, and that does happen. So I'm glad that that happens. But we also did learn something very interesting, I thought, about Charles. I loved that he had this unfinished novel of this time in his life where he had this sordid affair.
Yes, he used to be the Josh.
I like the fact that he has a past. He always just comes across as just like so squeaky clean and so rational about everything. So the fact that he had this sort of not well thought out experience, it just gives me a lot of insight into who he is and how he's able to control himself.
I think that's one of the reasons why I'm not Team Charles, is that he does seem so squeaky clean. You know, he doesn't seem human in some ways.
Like, he's so polished all the time that it's just like, you can't be that put together 24/7.
And he very rarely really shows his emotions. I mean, he's had odd moments, like when he was jealous when he thought Liza was, you know, falling in love with his friend that was the same age. Mm-hmm. I think that was in season 5.
Mm-hmm. So, he punches Josh, right?
He punched Josh, or Josh that punched him?
Oh, I think Josh punched him, but yeah. That was at the picnic. But that was an outburst, right? You know.
But he sort of has little odd moments of it. But most of the time, he's like cool, calm, in control. And, you know, he seems like a difficult person to get to know really well.
Yeah, like I'm sure you have friends in your life who are just like, I really don't know a ton about them. They're good people, but, you know, you just don't have the same, you know, sort of shared experiences, I guess.
Yeah.
It doesn't make him a bad person. It just makes him, interesting. So the fact that, like, we got this big nugget, I'm excited that this was brought up, because it does humanize him and it does give him sort of like a Josh edge. Like, is this Josh's future in a way too? But I do think in season 7, we'll see anything more with this book that he has, this unfinished novel.
Ooh, I hadn't really thought about that, to be honest. I hope so. It sounded like an interesting story.
I'm hoping that we get some sort of further continuation of that, just because of what, to me, it brought in terms of his personality and just a glimpse into his life where he has been very kind of one-dimensional.
I do hope we get to see a more human side of Charles. Like I said before, he does seem a little bit, you know, not quite human, because he just is so calm and in control all the time. No one can be like that 24/7. They've got a break at some point. So the other biggest moment in the series was when Charles proposes and Liza has not answered him yet.
Did she not answer him, or did she not get a chance? I mean, they did get interrupted by the conga line.
Yes, that's right. I mean, we did get Kelsey going, Yes, yes, Charles. Yes,
I do.
I thought she was going to be marrying him for a second.
All the things that had happened leading up to it, between like the reveal and now them being able to be public, that, yeah, I guess for Charles, this was the next logical step. I just don't know what Liza is thinking now. I mean, there's always this Josh component. We'll talk more about in just a second about like what happened with Josh this season. But he's always just there in the back of her mind. So,
but do you also think that Josh is always there in the back of Charles's mind as well? Like, is he proposing to Liza to take her away from Josh?
I didn't think of that. I feel like that is a stance that he would take, that he's just like, you need to make a decision.
And this is me, you know, because, you know, we've just
staking
seen
my
that.
Claim.
Exactly. He's just seen that ad of Infinitely 21 where, let's face it, she looks alive next to Josh. Like, she is totally in love with him in that picture.
Yeah. You know, conversely, the pictures of her with Charles from the photo shoot, that one that was like very cutesy, you know, it didn't paint them in the best light.
Not
obviously, it was intentional, you know, just to show the difference. But that definitely, I think, was a driver.
Charles is constantly comparing himself or competing with Josh, or feels he's competing with Josh at least.
No, I agree with that very much so. Those are the big Charles bombshells. So, but Josh, let's move to Josh now. So
big things for Josh.
Yes. All right. Bring us there.
Okay. So first season, Claire turns up on the doorstep pregnant with his baby. Did not see that coming.
I'm going to say I don't like Claire. I even watched Bridgerton, and at first I didn't like Daphne because I don't like Claire.
I can't believe you made that spill over to Bridgerton.
Well, I mean, I got over it, but no, I just, for what she did to Josh and how she literally took his heart out and trampled on it between season 5 and even now. I mean, yeah. She waited until she was like really, really pregnant.
She was like, 8 months before she told him. Yeah, it was not a cool thing to do. I think, you know, to not, and she was clearly planning to not tell him initially, given that she waited so long. It's nice that she actually decided to do it before she had the baby. But I don't like how she sort of treated him in some ways. But when they first got together, I did love them as a couple when they were first together. They just seemed to click really well. But when they sort of then rushed the getting into the marriage and things, it felt like they were forcing her at that point.
They definitely had undeniable chemistry. And I did like her in the beginning, but how she ended up treating him, using Liza when they were in Ireland, especially back in season 5, I saw what she was doing and she was just using him. And I didn't like it. Yeah. And the fact that she was trying to get Liza to be complicit in it and do the lying for her, I just didn't like it.
Yeah, I agree. But, you know, he does have a baby now. At least they decided not to get back together. You know, they've decided to get divorced. Clearly,
yes.
They're not working as a couple.
Yes, I did enjoy the fact that, you know, he proposed divorce. I thought that was very cute.
That was quite cute, yes.
And their baby, Gemma, is just adorable.
Oh my God, she is the cutest baby ever. I love that Lauren has made her an influencer.
Oh my God, hashtag wheelie lazy. Which just like my love of puns, just, you know, galore there.
You are the pun master.
I have my moments. Yes. My latest one is I got my Fauci ouchie. I got my first vaccine the other day. So.
Nice. I don't think I'm getting mine till next year sometime. It's going to be a while.
Wow.
But no, I loved how Lauren like made her this influencer. And I also loved how she tried to get free sex toys out of it as well.
Oh yeah. Lauren just, I love the dynamic. So as we go forward with these podcasts, we're going to basically be highlighting every single episode, Diana and Maggie, because there's always like, there's a good Diana-ism, and there's like, you know, Maggie always brings in like the worldly wisdom in her biting New York fashion. So we could do like, you know, the Diana, you know, component and what, you know, what's up with Maggie. But Lauren also brings like this element of fun and, you know, an injection of like sass and a bit of pop culture and whatnot.
Definitely.
So as Lauren comes into the picture, we'll highlight her, but she's more of a lesser character, but definitely Diana and Maggie for me.
Lauren doesn't always seem to feature in every episode, but when she does, she definitely makes, you know, makes a mark.
Yes. Memorable, for sure. Gemma loves butt plugs.
Why not?
And Josh is like, no.
He definitely became a dad at that moment.
Right. Claire makes this statement to Josh that basically she's got to move to Los Angeles because she's getting a promotion with her company, Google. You know, this moves Josh in a way that he's got to like figure out a different revenue stream, right? So That's how he becomes involved with the Infinitely 21. So let's talk about this ad.
Yes, this hot, hot ad.
I'll set it up just a little bit. So after the big reveal, the deals and the authors with Millennial are, you know, on the fence, if not bailing. And Infinitely 21 is this ad campaign where they were going to like sell books in the store. The ad marketer wants to back out following Liza's admission that she's, or revelation that she's in fact a Gen Xer, not a Millennial. Apparently they're warring factions. And you know, Liza has this outburst. I liked really what Liza said, that, you know, age is not an age. It's more of an attitude. So like, you know, if millennial is an age, then that's, you're limiting yourself. But really, it's more of how you live your life and how you are. You know, this resonated. And that's how Liza comes to do this ad, right? And they want her to be the face of Infinitely 21, which I thought is hilarious because there's a store called Forever 21. And that's the, I don't know if you knew that, but there's like that's a play on this store, Forever 21.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of that throughout the whole show, isn't there? You know, a lot of their books that come through are, you know, plays on real life books and things like that. So, yeah, they do all that a lot throughout the whole show, I notice.
This ad, and we've talked about this, so that the ad goes national. Charles, you know, Liza goes to Chicago to try to, like, you know, get Charles to talk to him before he sees it. Because, as you said, it's hot.
Yeah.
And she's definitely got, like, a ton of chemistry with Josh in this ad. And Liza's trying to intercept Charles to explain it, because to someone you're in a relationship with that's not in that ad, that is going to look very suspect.
Exactly. And, you know, I know this wasn't the plan for the ad originally, and it wasn't also meant to be a national campaign, so that's how good it was. But yeah, you know, if you saw your current partner with their ex and they looked so close and happy, yet you'd have to feel a little bit jealous.
Right. And, you know, so we talked about that being maybe Charles's motivation for the marriage proposal, but also it's Liza's motivation to write that stinking letter we talked about before.
Yeah. Well, that's the moment she says she will stop having a relationship with Josh. She promises that to Charles at that time.
But Josh, you know, sees Liza after Diana's bachelorette party and tells her, you know, you wrote that letter to the wrong person. Like, I see you and I know you and I know when you're lying, especially to yourself. Like that was a knife in the heart.
I think it just shows how well Josh knows the real her. And she does seem to lie to herself. Like when she was talking to Maggie about her relationship with Josh and that it was always going to be special and that, when she talks about Charles, you know, the most prominent thing I remember from that is that she says he's age appropriate. That doesn't scream I'm madly in love with him.
That's not the basis for a relationship necessarily.
I think Liza doesn't understand why she feels the way she does around Josh, but I think she just needs to go with it.
There's something that is like universally appealing to her about Josh.
Yeah.
As much as they had their relationship and they were, you know, very close and had a good time, even when they're apart, they're still really close. Like there's something universal about these two. They operate in the same sphere. So they do keep running into each other. And anytime either one of them is having a crisis, that's the person that they go to. So after Liza's secret blows up, she tells Josh, you know, she's on the phone with Josh and she said that she made a mess of things. And he's like, I'll come to you.
They're always there for each other. That's why it seems so awful that she writes that letter saying, I can't be that person for you anymore.
Yeah. And, you know, she's promised to be there for his daughter and you need your friends, you know, doesn't matter like where you are in life. But, you know, when you have kids, you need friends.
I think breaking up with friends is worse than breaking up with a romantic partner sometimes.
Yeah. And then sometimes it just happens, you know, through life. But I mean, like, you know, to kill it is worse.
Yeah.
All right. So Kelsey seems to be like the next big, you know, person to kind of fill in some of the gaps here. She really had a roller coaster season. She went from being named publisher the very first episode to becoming, self-employed because she had an unfortunate social media faux pas, and then back again, right?
Yeah, as an equity partner.
Yes, yeah. So she has, she has a lot of movement this season. The rival publishing houses really felt brutal to me for her, because to find out that Charles is the one behind it and basically stealing all of her opportunities, it felt like such a betrayal. And that's the other reason why it really didn't sit well with me, all the competition, but also like you're subverting this person that you've groomed. I didn't like it.
Yeah, I kind of felt like she was set up to fail a lot this season. Being thrown into a publisher role, which clearly she hadn't been fully trained for. Yes, she was good as an editor, but the publisher role involved a lot around the finances and things that, you know, she hadn't had a lot of experience with. I just felt like she needed someone to mentor her into that role. She didn't have that.
Right, because the only other person she had around her at the time was Quinn, and she's just an awful human being.
Oh my God, the reactions to her book when they did the market research.
Oh, the focus group, yeah.
The focus group, God. That was it. Oh, the reactions, and one of them was like, can I please have that unread this?
Can I do that? Can I unread something?
Yeah, she was not the person that you needed as a mentor.
Yeah, and then, yeah. You know, Charles being the secret rival, and then using Zane as well, I felt like that was very underhanded as well, just given their history. And they do have undeniable chemistry, even though I don't think either one of them wants to be honest with each other about how they feel, really.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just not a fan of Zane at all. I just find him a little bit childish, really. He has a lot of, he just seems to have a lot of temper tantrums all the time.
Well, I think the two of them really have temper tantrums with each other. Like, they're just not, like, emotionally mature enough to deal with each other.
He did his temper tantrums at work and at home. I felt like Kelsey was a little bit more professional in the workplace. He was very full of himself. I never quite understood why, because until
Arabian Sea.
Did he have any other successes?
Yeah, not really. I mean, they got that exonerated book out from under Millennial.
That's true, but did that actually go to print in the end? Or I never really saw whether that happened or not.
Yeah, they just kind of left that alone. But I would like to read that book.
I don't know. It does sound good, but I just feel like he was a bit full of himself.
Kelsey has this big social media faux pas. Like, this is a big thing, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, I felt really bad for her. Do you think the fallout from that was valid, like with her being removed as publisher from this stodgy boardroom of men?
Given the fact that they'd already said the day before that they were very conservative, they didn't seem to have any idea about social media. It wasn't a massive surprise that they wanted her removed. I kind of feel like, though, they would have found any excuse to get rid of her if they could have, because they probably just feel more comfortable with an older man in charge.
I think just a man. I don't think, yes. I think if it had been Zane or versus Charles, I just think if it was a man that they would have been like, okay, we're good.
Yeah. Because it was just, as a lot of boards are, filled with old white men.
And that was actually the shocking part to me when I saw that that boardroom full of men. I was like, there's not one woman here. That's just not reflective of kind of like where we are in society right now. But I also wanted to talk to you about like Kelsey's, her journey with this faux pas, right? So she stepped down as publisher, and then Lauren wants her to do like this high school, you know, conversation. And at first she's like, I need to distance myself from this. But through her own maturity, she decides to embrace it. What did you think about how she approached this?
I really like that part, actually. And what I liked most about it is that she stayed mad. You know, she didn't go, oh, this has happened, I just have to accept it. She's like, this has happened, but I shouldn't have to accept what happened. You know, and I feel like it will lead to change, the fact that she's just not going to let it go.
Yeah, I like the fact that she owned it, in the sense that like she played the video for them, right? The little mashup at the end, right? That when Liza is defending her after the little outburst, saying, you know, we have a job because she got the money, honey, right? So Kelsey owned that at that talk. You know, just shows that, you know, yes, you can do things and they can be dumb, but you could also like learn and grow from it.
And I also think it wasn't that bad. Like, you saw a bit of cleavage, really. That was it.
Yeah, I guess, you know, they had to keep it kind of PG.
It's true.
Yeah, just as far as like as a message, I liked that as a message. It's like, yeah, you can mess up, but you know, it's also important that you own it and you move on from it. And, you know, if you can use it to your advantage, do it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I felt like she got harshly punished.
I agree. You know, she wants to branch out on her own because, you know, she's been the publisher and she doesn't want to go back to being the editor. So I didn't necessarily like that Kelsey's first stop was Quinn. For an investor, you know, Quinn had done a lot in this season six to make me dislike her a ton. The bullying in the restaurant of like, you know, the cheering, like the tap tap on the desk of, you know, it will be what we publish, you know, that whole dynamic. I just didn't like her tactics, like the bulk buying, the Twitter bots, you know, it was all like a lot of smoke and mirrors.
I agree. Quinn is not the right person to go to. And also she'd already proven herself untrustworthy by pulling her funding with no notice.
That was a badass move. I mean, not in a good way. Just to be like, I got burned. So Quinn got burned because of another interview with Liza saying that, you know, when the secret came out, you know, Liza
had already told Quinn.
Yeah, she'd already known before, but Liza had already told the interviewer before that Quinn knew and was supportive, and Quinn got burned. And I feel like that's really going to hurt her electability. So I feel like Quinn is not a trustworthy person to be in business with in any way, shape or form.
Yeah, no, Quinn is clearly out for herself and only herself.
Whatever with Quinn, I just feel like is not going to end well because Quinn is only out for herself. And it's just, if you're going to get in her way, you're going to get chewed up.
So yeah, I wouldn't trust her with starting a company ever.
That leaves us with Maggie. I feel that like Maggie is like literally the soul of the show. Like she's the conscience and I just love any time that she's on screen.
I just love Maggie. Like she just brings something to the show that it needs. You know, she kind of connected so many things this season. She was the one that suggested the companies merging together. She was there a lot for Josh as well. She's the heart of the show, really.
I think everyone deserves a best friend like Maggie, and Maggie is best friend to not just Liza, Lauren, Josh, even Kelsey, to some extent, rely on Maggie in ways that didn't really exist before this season.
Yeah, I think with Lauren and Kelsey living with Josh has brought them all closer together. And Maggie is like the one that everyone goes to for advice.
Yeah, she's like the sagely person, you know?
Yeah, and she has great advice.
She does. Maggie having some moments this season. She had her once a 10-year penis sampling.
That was fantastic with the flipper.
Yes, the flipper. And then she flipped the table, right? So that was pretty spectacular.
You know, I just love the way she's just out there and just lives her life and does what she wants to do.
I think my favorite Maggie moment from the season, though, is when her girlfriend has the homeopathic remedy for her yeast infection with the garlic clove. And everyone's like, I'm smelling garlic bread.
Yes. What I learned from that was if you're going to put garlic up your cooch, then you need and have a dinner party, you need to be serving something with garlic.
Yeah, to mask the aromas.
Have garlic bread, something, you know. You need something to mask it. That was so funny, though.
I love the fact that she owned it and she told them exactly what was going on. Like, I feel like Maggie's the only person who would have been honest in that situation.
She's definitely the most honest person, I think, in that whole show.
All right. Well, that kind of brings us to the end of season six. Did I miss anything? Anything big that I like that we left out here?
No, I think that covers the season pretty well.
All right. So now that we're caught up on season six, what is the first question that you need to have answered, Emma, in season seven?
Does she say yes? And I really hope she doesn't, because obviously I'm Team Josh.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's literally the cliffhanger that we left on. Either whatever way she answers yes or no, there's going to be some major fallout, I feel. I don't feel that the letter is the end of Liza and Josh at all.
It can't be. There's too much history there that cannot be the end of them.
I'm curious about Charles's book to a lesser extent. I mean, yes, I agree. Like the big question that I need to have answered for season seven is what is her answer? And then, you know, if it's no, does Josh come back in the picture?
I hope so.
Does Quinn come back in the picture? I mean, she featured heavily in this season again, and especially with Kelsey, you know, looking for her as a publisher. But with Kelsey coming back, like, I feel like her being burned again, you know, is not going to be the end of Quinn.
I kind of wish it was the end of Quinn, but you're probably right.
next week, join us because that will be the season 7, episode 1 premiere. And make sure you watch the show, come back and listen to us. We will be discussing this week by week. So you guys can find us on social media. We are at Pod Clubhouse on all the things, on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. You can find me on Twitter. I'm Shields McGangsta with an A at the end. If you have any questions, if you have any feedback, we're happy to answer any and all questions. And if you have any questions, we could definitely incorporate them into our podcast. Also, if you could rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast wherever you got this from, this way it helps people find the show. It's great feedback for us to know if you guys are listening and what you like to know and you like to hear. And this way also, you get a notification every time that we drop an episode. So we appreciate you listening, and we hope to see you again next week. Thanks.
Thanks all.
Thank you for listening. This has been an original Pod Clubhouse production. Pod Clubhouse is a podcast network dedicated to encouraging collaboration among podcasters and friends to bring a fresh voice and diverse perspective on a wide array of content. Please visit and leave a comment for us at podclubhouse.com. Rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast feeds on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can find us at Pod Clubhouse. Our DMs are always open, and we'd love to hear from you.